Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts.
True that.
Special guest is Giulio Passamonte Colamartino. I like saying that. It's actually quite cool. How come you got like such a long name? Yeah.
Oh, well, my last name is Passamonte. Colamartino is my husband's name. And in Italy, they hyphenate it. But I legally am Giulia Passamonte because it won't fit on the driver's license.
It sounds like a Scooby-Doo villain name or something.
I just thought it sounded very cool. So I kind of kept it as my art name, you know.
Let's see who you really are.
See what you really are. Yes. Blah. I know. Well,
I've got this idea that everybody's got problems, okay? Now, and everybody's got like this little, what somebody once told me was idiosyncrasies. What is an idiosyncrasy?
An idiosyncrasy?
Do you know?
It's like a little thing that bugs them, like a pet peeve or maybe a peculiarity about that person. I think that's what it means, a particular peculiarity that's particular to that person.
As opposed to an idiom, which is just a particular characteristic that is particular to that person?
I don't know. Idiom is more a saying or a way of saying something, I think.
It would be more in tune with my particular idiom, sir?
No, that would be your particular personality, perhaps, or your particularity. I don't know.
I think we're getting off topic here.
Yes.
Anyway, my point was... we've always got these really interesting, intricate, and very, very different experiences, yet we often share the same truths. And right. What's funny about that is it means that there's no one route to the truth. I've had countless people tell me that there is only one truth. And I was thinking, well, hold on a second. How can you believe that there is only one truth if everybody can come to the truth in a different way, right?
Exactly.
It means there must be many ways of saying the same truth.
There are.
At the very least.
When you Google
and you go up and you search what the one truth is, you know what comes up? Religious dogma.
That's a very, very good point. Because if you close your mind and say, well, there's only one way, it's, you know, usually my way, then you really block yourself off to the truth, you know, because you don't allow any new information to come in, or you don't allow yourself to perhaps change your thoughts or change your opinions about something. You know, I think once you get to the point where you stop learning and stop assimilating information, you're dead on some level.
Mm-hmm. You do have to be a perpetual student.
Yes. Exactly. And I hope never to know it all, you know, really. I mean, I feel like I've got still so much more to learn, and it's what makes life much more interesting that way.
Yeah. Well, I've got a different learning style to a lot of people. Some people like to specialize and have an absolute 100% deep, in-depth knowledge about like one subject, maybe two.
Right.
I like to have a little bit of knowledge about as many subjects as I can possibly fit into my head, basically.
Cool.
So I know a little bit about everything sort of thing.
Right, right.
But not a lot about anything.
But I think it's important to have everyone have their own learning style, and this is what I know you struggled with school. I had my two older children struggled horribly with school. They got thrown out of every class and daycare they were ever in.
I got suspended 17 times from high school.
I think they've got you beat. But, you know, they turned out to be the most awesome kids because they think out of the box. They're creative. They're both musically gifted. They're very, very bright. You know, actually,
Can we save our children from school? You know? I mean, look at this. Raise your hand. Like, just think about this psychically, mentally thinking. How many people actually really enjoyed their time at school?
Oh.
Okay? virtually nobody. Only the people who had everything always handed to them for their entire life on a silver frickin' spoon enjoyed it because they wound up going on to rule your country or a major CEO of a corporation or something like that and snorting cocaine in the men's room at Studio 54.
Exactly. Man, that's the truth. Here's where they get you, though. The catch-22 is that when I was raising my three kids, I was a single mom. And I had to work my butt off to be able to pay bills. Had I had the ability, I would have homeschooled them. But it's not possible to do that when you have to work to survive. So it's like a catch-22. You know, I would have loved nothing better than to be able to teach them at home. But, you know, it's just a real, real tough situation because I really think that school totally destroys creativity. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think you're right. It kind of destroys creativity or it sculpts it in a way that's abnormal. But what if you compromise? Let's say theoretically, you have a child of a truther baby. And you raise that child at all times to know what the heck is going on. Right. So when they go to school, you'll be telling them things like, now, son, there's going to be a couple of logical fallacies you're going to have to watch out for. One is appeal to authority. I'm correct because I'm in the authority position. That's fallacious. It comes from the Latin meaning to lie. Okay, so if somebody says that to you, son, you know that person's a liar, and you can't trust a single word that comes out of their mouth. And the kid will come home and go like, Dad, I just realized I can't trust any of the teachers, and can't trust about 98% of the students. Okay, well now you've identified. So now what you've done, son, is that you have identified the 2% of the students that you actually want to be friends with.
Oh, man. Right.
Right? Let's talk about tactics here. You can't raise your children out of the system because the system has got you in its frickin' noose. You can't raise your kids yourself. Right. So you have to employ various education techniques, which don't take a long time to teach, so that the child can actually be in that learning disabling environment and still know how to figure things out and work things out for themselves and operate independently without dependence on that system, because it's only once you get an instilled feeling of dependence on a system that you think that the system needs that you need the system.
You need the system, right.
It's what the other way around. The system needs you to believe it.
Yes, definitely. Well, what better way than to be an example like you? Let's say someday you get married and you have kids or whatever. What better way than be the example? That, you know, here you are doing this, doing what you love to do. You're living from your heart. You've got meaning in your life. You've got a purpose. What better way to teach your children than that way? You know, but the key is being aware, even having the knowledge.
Well, it can't be hands off. You can't just be an example. You actually have to be guide and sculpt and shape in a proper direction. And I think ultimately the goal of a parent, I think, should be to teach the child to teach themselves how to be an adult and to take personal responsibility.
Right. You're talking about teaching them critical thinking.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I do agree. I'm on the same page with you there. It does have to be hands-on.
Also hope, personal power, belief. The power of just believing that you can get something done will often be the difference between somebody who gives up on life and somebody who succeeds at it.
Oh, man, you said a mouthful there. That's a fact. The thing is, though, you can't just tell your kids, okay, you got to do this, this, and this without actually doing it yourself. So it has to be.
I know. You have to employ trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, use the technique for good. Why not, right? We can subliminally program our children for good.
Yeah.
Actually, recently, I came across some CDs that I believe in doing all kinds of different techniques to reprogram the subconscious mind, because that's what actually generates a reality. And this is where the elite work, you know, with all these different symbols and subliminal programming and TV and all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, heck, if that's the case, then I found some CDs that help you reprogram your own thinking for prosperity, for self-esteem and that kind of stuff, and actually turn one of my kids on to it. And it works. It really works. So you can take some of these techniques that the evil elite use and use it for good. And use it for, you know, teaching the kids how to survive in the system.
This
beat them at their own game, you know?
This reminds me of a very important thought that I had. People always wonder how they can contribute to changing the system. Well, here's the thing. If you can define any single point of the system, any single point, any institution, any organization, any individual, they've already got the laid out but plan for you that they're implementing. You just do the direct opposite, and all of a sudden you're actually fighting the system and making it work for yourself.
Exactly, exactly. I know. I love your saying, this is kind of a little bit of an aside, when you say, if it comes from mainstream media or a mainstream source, the exact opposite is possibly true. And if it's not in your kitchen, it's likely a soft kill bioweapon. I love that.
It's quite funny, isn't it? You know,
it's true,
and it's so excessive, and that's what I found is the most funny things in life are the things that are so true and so crazy at the same time as to make it frickin' hilarious.
Oh, it is. It totally is. You know, when I think about, like, I read a book some years back called Fast Food Nation. And I'm looking, and I always used to say that fast food is like plastic food. It's not real food. Well, sure enough, don't I read the list of ingredients and the stuff they do to that food? And it's like, oh, my word, you know, they're altering the chemicals to make it taste like beef. Okay, so you're actually making this out of cellulose, and it's not beef, so it has to taste like beef. And it makes me think on a larger scale how everything's sort of embellished, and it's all this big illusion. You know, and the only way is to go inside yourself and use the intuition that we were given as human beings to discern the truth. That's what you have to learn to do. This is what I try to help people do. You know, and it's like, wake up and go inside yourself. The heck with that. Don't ask me what to do. Don't ask me to make a decision for you. Learn to do it inside yourself. I'll teach you how.
I was just interviewed on a show like yesterday or the day before, and they asked me, is there any piece of advice you want to give to anybody who wants to get into what you're doing, Vinny? And I say, well, best piece of advice is don't ask for anybody for help.
Right.
Right.
On
help yourself, make it frickin' happen. And you'll be surprised that as soon as you've got it working, other people show up to help you and you don't even need to ask.
It's amazing. It's so true. I remember when I first started doing my art. And like I said, I mean, I was like, I had two nickels to rub together. At the time, it was like $18,000 in the hole. You know, and I tried to talk to, and the town was run by a bunch of scumbaggery that only cared about trying to, you know, hopefully I think they were trying to get me to auction the house and take it. I think that's what they did with a lot of people that got run out of town because they could no longer afford the ridiculous taxes that had tripled in 5 years that I was there, or 10 years, excuse me. Long story short, when I started doing my artwork and decided to take the leap, all of a sudden I got a kiln. Then I got supplies. Somebody else gave me money for clay, you know, and I mean, it was like one thing after another. Then I had these two merchants, these lovely people, they're Ren and Julie from La Ren's Nest, who took my pieces for like 2 or 3 years all over the country. So they got known in the reenactment community. They got known in some of the education communities and stuff. And so it started just going from there. Those guys were awesome. I mean, I think in the 3 years that they transported all my wares, one cup chipped. You know, they were so careful with my work. I met some really good quality people you're right. Every step of the way, there's been someone that gets put in your path. You know, and eventually I even got a couple of jobs for a couple of different movies. You know, and those are fun to do. You have to work like a dog, because it's fast and furious, but they pay well. And it does. I think if you just keep doing the next right thing and the next right thing, then the next right thing continues to happen and get put into your experience, you know, and you just have to keep going, but you can't give up. You've got to pull, you know, because there's going to be times that are tough. There's going to be times that stink. There's going to be times you're going to just go to yourself, oh, what the frig did I get into here? You know, and you just got to keep going anyway. David Icke says that a lot. You know, he said, just don't give up. Just, you know, keep your eye on the prize and just keep going. And look at him today, you know. He's always been an inspiration to me because, I mean, he literally got laughed off the TV like 25 years ago. And look at him now. He packs the stadium with like 6,000 people. It's like, wow, dude, you rock. You know, that's so awesome. I mean, what a beautiful example of inspired, working right from the heart, doing what you believe and having success in life. The right way, not the corporate way, which, oh, by the way, if the corporations are now people, they're psychopaths.
And incidentally, not, you know, corporations employ a lot of psychopaths to do the building.
They are. They're psychopathic entities. But, you know, the way we've been taught with those guys is like step on as many toes as you can and just claw your way to the top. And, you know, just this compete and just knock people down the ladder as you go. And I mean, you know, that always made me sick. So I used to think, well, you know, I'm a spiritual person and I'm an artist and I'll never make any money because I don't think that way. But then you see people like David Icke and you watch how they just live right from the heart. They do what they believe and they've made it, you know? And I was like, yeah, it is possible to be a spiritual person, a loving human being and make it, you know? You can. I fully believe that. I've seen so many examples of that as I've done this with my artwork. And no, if you're an artist, you don't have to die starving to death, folks. That's
exactly.
I'm hoping to try to show people by example. It's like you can do well. You can support yourself. You can live and do what you love to do and get to do it for a living, you know? And sure, you're going to have moments where, you know, maybe times are a little tough or money's a little slow, but I have found in my experience, I've always had what I've needed, you know?
My grandfather once said, it'll all be all right in the end. But granddad, what if it's not? Well, it's not the end.
What was that?
He said,
in the end?
Well, it's not the end.
Oh, it's not the end. Right. Well said. Well said. That's so true. Yeah, I definitely believe that. So, yeah.
He was quite funny old guy, my granddad. We brought him home some yam cha one time, you know, some fried squid tentacles. He's sitting there chewing it with his dentures in, kind of like... And this projectile gets launched, comes out of his mouth and hits me right in the chest. And he goes, gotcha. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And I also wanted to iterate that, you know, if you're going up against people who are really, really bad, 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 evil, slanderous, horrific people. Yeah. Don't go into it lightly, right? Mm. Know what it is you're dealing with and know what you're prepared to put up with. I mean, because most of the time, if bad people are on the internet or whatever, just block and move on. I mean, come on, they're not worth the effort, bro.
Nope, they're not.
For the most part, anyway. Sometimes you do need to actually work at it. So, in terms of healing, this is another important aspect that I think kind of largely left out of this, because we're talking about psychology, right?
Right.
Because you think about this. Just imagine for a moment that you don't actually have any empathy, that you see people, I don't know, you see a mother starving to death, offering you her child so that she can at least have a sandwich to eat that day, kind of thing. You know, something really, really, really horrifically bad.
Right.
All right. And then imagine you don't actually care. And in fact, you find it funny and amusing, and you just give the sandwich so you can sacrifice the child later and torture it and drink its blood. All right.
Sick. Yeah.
Imagine you are that person. Okay. Now, think about this. You're not that person anymore. You're you. But you know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with that person. Most people scream in fear and terror at the horrible creature they are suddenly looking upon. And they try to pass it off and get the hell out of there. And you know what happens? Another child will get murdered, and it's tortured, and it's blood drank, because you didn't do anything. But if you do something, it might be your child next. It's a catch-22, isn't it? It's about self-preservation.
Yeah. What do you think we can do?
Anything you can.
Anything you can. I do it.
Silence is golden. And as far as I know, 99% of gold is now currently made up. It's just paper. It doesn't exist.
It does not. No.
And so is the value of silence. Right. You know what's really golden? Yelling from the rooftops, screaming out, exposing scumbaggery. That is freaking gold.
Totally. I think you're absolutely right as far as inform. The thing is, are people willing to listen? You hope that at least even for every 100 people that you're yelling at, if one gets it, you've done something.
Well, if 7 people are yelling...
at different points.
Allegedly, statistically, that's what it takes, is 7 people to say the same thing for you before it clicks into your mind and it makes you think that it's true. So if every truther everywhere who believed 9/11 was an inside job said to almost everybody they meet, "Hey, bro, I'm Vinny, 9/11 was an inside job, how's it going?"
Vinny, inside job.
It was an inside job.
It might be funny, but at the end of the day, if everybody was doing that all the time, everybody would know that 9/11 was an inside job within a week.
Right.
And believe it, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's what they do to programmers. Again, it's like using the techniques that the elite use, but use it for good. You know, they repeat. Although I don't agree in like yelling and screaming at people. You know, I think you can quietly talk to people and get a lot more accomplished that way. I think also it's important to allow people to make their choice. And they either choose to listen to you or they don't. Like in my case, you know, I can, for example, watch somebody killing themselves with heroin addiction or alcohol or something like that. And what I can do is say, hey, you know, there's a way out. Now, either they're going to say yes or no. But I can't take the needle out of their arm and I can't plug the jug for them. They've got to make that decision themselves. And if I decide to waste my time on somebody that doesn't want the help, that's robbing me from helping somebody else that might want the help. So I've got to let it go and move on. You know, I can't put attachment on whatever result I'm going to get. I can only do what I do and hope, you know, that I get the message out some way. For me, I try to do it one person at a time. I deal pretty much in my work, you know, what I call my life's work, which is healing, with the aftermath of what's happened to people that have been affected by these sick people, you know. And one by one, I work with people, one-on-one. I have 4 different people I'm working with right now, presently. And I share my own experience, my own journey, and I offer validation. I think that's what everybody really wants, is love and validation, you know, and to show them how I did it, if they're willing to give it a shot.
Oh, my God, yeah. I was just thinking about that, just as you said it. That's why I feel so good, is because Sarah really loves me, and my audience gives me validation for the things that I'm talking about and doing. It's good. Things have aligned for me just recently.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And as you say, too, if people don't love or validate you, you know what? They have a choice. They don't have to. But you also don't have to stand in the line of fire and put up with their garbage or listen to their freaking BS. You know, you don't. You have a choice. You can say, you know what? Save your breath, because, you know, talk to the hand because the face ain't hearing it. And Michael Tesserian says it really well. What you need to deal with that is boundaries. 3 things he says: boundaries, boundaries, and more boundaries. You know, in that way, you protect yourself.
Well, you've got to restrict yourself. I mean, look at it this way. It's like the Constitution, okay? institutions there specifically so that you've got those boundaries, so that your freedoms can't just willy-nilly be frickin' stolen off you and taken away, so you can't just easily be turned into some kind of dictatorship. It takes like 100 years of the Federal Reserve to do that. Now, I need to...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and that gives me another important realization that I had yesterday. Okay. You're thinking about this movement. Okay. Now, can we win? Can we win? That's what a lot of people are thinking. And I say, well, of course we can win. Of course we can win. And I was just kind of thinking about that, sort of looking back and going, wait a second. Let's have a look back through history. Big, bad, tyrannical state comes up, gets overthrown by good people, then a period of peace ensues, and then big, bad, figgery interests take control again, and then they get overthrown again, and then they take control again and overthrown again and overthrown again. Okay, however, this is different. We have the information age. Mm. Now things can go viral. Now things can spread with such veracity as to be directly imprinted on the human consciousness on a permanent level. Let's take 9/11 imagery, for example. When I say the word 9/11, all you can see those towers crumbling and just poofing into freaking big clouds of billowing, particularized nanodust, you know?
Yes.
And then you think about this. This agenda's been running for a long time, hundreds of years easily, since the days of the Battle of Waterloo when Rothschild took control of England. So plans have been afoot to very, very slowly corrupt the entire world's thinking system. Now, I'm not sure if this has been attempted before, because that means that this cycle of bad guys winning, then good guys overthrowing them, will end.
Mm.
It means that the bad guys will win so overarchingly that they could never be defeated again.
Right.
Ooh. Now, so that means the opposite can certainly be true as well.
Right.
That means that the good guys could possibly win this time and imprint the entire world with all of this information on a permanent basis so that the bad guys could never win again.
Exactly. The advantages... There's a lot more of us than there are of the bad guys. I mean, you've got a planet of 7 billion people run by a handful of a few hundred. So the trick is to get people to wake up. And once the consciousness changes, and it doesn't take like a ton of people, it only takes a few. I think it was Greg Braden that says something to the, I may be misquoting this, but something to the effect of the square root of 1% of people can affect a change in thousands of people. So if you can hold, you get a small little group of people holding, for example, a meditation of peace, it can affect thousands of other people. So it only takes a few to affect the many. You know, the whole world doesn't have to come along with you. So if you just get a few people to start changing, it'll tip things. And I think that's happening because more and more people are waking up. I mean, I remember years ago, probably 20 years ago when I started this whole journey with the herbal healing. And again, it was for myself because I didn't want to be doing the Thorazine shuffle going down the street. You know, people were like, oh, yeah, herbs. Oh, you know, it's all that's hocus pocus stuff and witchcraft. And now people are really open to hearing about it, and they want to find out more. And many times people have asked me, can you make me a remedy for this? I really don't want to take the junk that they're selling over the counter. It's crap, you know, and I'll do that. So it's, you know, people are beginning to think.
It's beginning the baby boomer generation, I think, are the primary participants in this wake-up revolution, because who better to finance, participate in, and help to run against a system than one has seen the system be set up for 30 or 40 years.
Ah, true, true. And I think, as you say, too, with the age of information, people aren't going to get duped so easily because people...
Well, I found in this movement what's happening really well is the young people who are very technologically literate are helping out their elders who are more or less technologically illiterate, but they've got all the information in their head. They know how to do documents and so on and so forth, but they don't know how to film it all, edit it, put it up on YouTube.
Exactly.
Or on radio and so on and so forth. They just don't have the skill. So people work together. You've got your skill base. I've got my skill base to help you get what you need, which is to get the word out. In so doing, I think we can actually close this generation gap because it's an artificial thing.
It is.
I found what's really been dangerous about the youth culture that I'm starting to see today, very little interest in real issues, very little interest in anything of true value. It's mostly pop culture, junk food, and drug abuse. That's what I see being promoted.
Medication, like they start to give you in school to dumb you down. But I also see, you see, it's almost like you're seeing both sides of the coin, because you see the extremely dumbed down, and you're also seeing young people. Well, to me, you're a young people because I'm 53 and you're 29, right? That are very awake, very alert, very with what's happening, very interested in the facts. Even the people from Joy Camp, for example, I love watching that and laughing, but those guys are so right on. My son, who's the same age as you, who's very aware and very alert. My daughter as well.
But do you know why that is?
Why?
Because all of the people that we listen to, talk to, and have as friends are a lot older than us.
Ah. You think so? Yeah, that could be.
I know so.
Yeah, you might be right, because I know my son has a lot of older friends. But there's enough of you guys out there that's going to... No, they have children.
I think you might be missing the point here. It's actually the elders that are interacting with the youth that are able to actually energize and invigorate the youth. The problem is the youth has become so disbanded over only just two decades of pop culture and terrible bad music that when you turn on, you stab yourself in the head with a screwdriver, as most elderly people that I know who listen to modern day pop music will say. And as a result, we've become alienated from each other. That familiarity, and what's great about YouTube is that I can go and watch somebody who is 78 years old give a lecture about a topic now relatively easily. It's not that hard. And in so doing, it's bridging that gap, and it's allowing me as a young person access to my elders' knowledge free of charge, extremely easily at my fingertips. And then when I'm done with that, I can then go into the next person. But back in the 70s, it wasn't like that. You actually had to go to different particular lecture halls or pick up specific books and so on and so forth, and spend an extended quantity of time in order to obtain a relatively small amount of knowledge compared with the quantity of knowledge that you can obtain nowadays by watching these lectures and radio shows directly on YouTube. We're making a completely different ball game altogether now in terms of being able to activate people and enlighten them at a geometric rate.
You're absolutely right about that. It's sort of kind of going back to the original way that humans were meant to live as a tribe, with, you know, side by side with your elders, your younger people, your children, and all that, and work as a unit. But the whole divide and conquer thing is happening concurrently. Like, for example, I was talking to my brother who's he's stationed in Germany right now. He's a Catholic priest, and he's also my best friend. He's a wonderful guy. And interestingly, I happen to be, you know, an eclectic pagan, but yet it's never been an issue as far as our spirituality, because he's a very spiritual guy. And he was talking about walking around, and he said, something's wrong. He was walking around the lake near where he lives. He took another walk and realized everybody was talking on a handheld iPod. And so they were like holding hands but talking on their iPod, and they weren't talking.
Oh, my God. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here. And I don't know where we're going to leave off with it either. So, Julia, could you please share with me an experience of yours that you feel was really, really important in the shaping of your life? Preferably something that was traumatic.
Okay.
And, or actually, and the other one was something where you really, really messed up and actually had to really apologize to somebody quite profusely.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because there's a reason I was asking this. I wanted to come up with a list of questions of how of questions that you can ask a psychopath about whether or not to identify whether or not they're a psychopath. Psychopaths can't apologize. Wait, so you ask them to retell the story up. Something like
that. And I'm incapable of emotion, so I therefore had no experience that was traumatic. Okay.
So if you ask that question, they'll come up with nothing.
Really blank for 15 minutes. For me, the most traumatic experience I had to say was high school. It was a really cold place. I mean, all they really cared about is perform. It was in a upclass suburb. It was considered one of the best, quote unquote, schools in the country as far as public high schools go. And it was a nightmare for me, because if you're a sensitive person and you're around a bunch of crocodiles, and anyway, being around, this is with the psychic attacks and all this kind of stuff with the other students was going on, and then at home and everything else, I had attempted suicide twice. The second attempt, and I'm not ashamed to talk about this because, you know, it's just what happened to me. It's what happens when you're under psychic attack like that. You think it's your fault. You think that, you know, you don't even deserve to live. And so the second attempt, I had inhaled an entire can of cooking spray, basically, to try to off myself. And what happened during that experience was that I had this, almost like it wasn't like a vision or anything, but like a knowing of saying, you know, you have a purpose in this life. You can die or you can go on. You have a message to give, you know, and I had no idea what it was or anything like that, but you're not done yet. And I never attempted to take my own life again after that. So it was very deep, very profound. I then, of course, went and got some help. In the meantime, a teacher, it was my Latin teacher, actually, rest his soul, he just passed away about a month ago, who realized what was going on. And he was a very loving, wonderful person in the midst of this sea of just horror. And my art teacher was the other one that used to let me come and paint in her art room. And both of them just kind of held my hand through that whole experience and said, you know, you're a very special person and you've got a lot to give someday. Someday you're going to help people. And I used to think, oh, they're just, you know, they're just crazy. My Latin teacher had given me a sense of purpose by allowing me to do this whole report on the Roman army and how it worked. And I had made this little papier-mâché Roman guy and went around to all the classes and lectured. And it kept me alive, you know, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that man. And for my art teacher, who let me discover how creative and how much I love to paint. So that was that part of it. As far as messing up, where do I start? I think really I have to say probably with my kids. When I, you know, raise them.
I can see a lot of parents out there who just went, yep, well, that's mine too.
Part two, you know, because I, you know, first of all, I had no parenting skills, because parenting skills are learned. And when you're raised by narcissists that have no empathy, you don't learn how to socially interact, which is why I think I got picked on a lot. You don't have any clue of how to be emotionally available. There's a lot of things you have to learn by example. So, you know, I went and got help for that. 8 years of with a wonderful guy that taught me how to parent, really. And long story short, I think the worst of it was that I worked so many hours to try to get stuff that I wasn't physically around. I was working like 60, 70 hours a week driving a fork truck. And I must have had layaways in every store to make sure, you know, they had the nice clothes and they looked good and the house looked nice. And, oh, it's just insanity. And, you know, I wasn't there for my kids, but I thought I was doing the right thing because I was giving them stuff so they wouldn't go without. And this is, I mean, talk about really being sucked into the system. And this is when I ended up hitting my bottom with the, you know, because of course, in order to survive in that kind of environment, you got to do lots of drugs, you know, to keep working so you can just speed your brains out. And that's how I was doing those kinds of hours. So I think that the greatest disservice I did, not only to myself, but by not being available to my children. And, you know, when you're coming off drugs like that, you can tend to get kind of grouchy, to say the least, and abusive. And I was, you know, I was mean a lot of times, but I knew it. You know, the difference is that I knew something was wrong, and I knew this was not the way to raise my kids. And I knew there had to be a better way. And the difference between me and a narcissist or a psychopath is that I knew I needed help and went and got help, you know. And today I have a fabulous relationship with all three kids, you know. And what's even cooler is that, and I totally didn't expect this part of it, they understand. That was, I think, the greatest gift that came out of it. They understand what happened. And now they've got kids of their own that also are extremely creative nonconformist children that they've had their hands full. So they understand it, even my older two, I mean, understand it even on a deeper level. No, I guess my third does too, because he adopted the little daughter that he has. So yeah, and she's quite a card herself. So I think that you know, the worst tragedy about really feeling like I did my kids a disservice has turned out to be the greatest gift also, because I have a phenomenal relationship today with all three of those guys, you know. So that's pretty much it, I guess.
Oh, did you ever have to apologize to them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just saying that I'm sorry I wasn't available for you, and I realized that I made mistakes, and I know that, you know, I had no clue what I was doing, and I'm sorry for yelling at you and calling you names and saying all those rotten things. I mean, it's something that I really would have dreamed that either parent had done with me, just to say, I'm sorry, once. You know, but if one's a narcissist, then they never make mistakes, you see. So I didn't want to be like that. I chose to, you know, I think the most important thing in life is to take responsibility for one's own well-being and happiness, you know, well, and not blame the world.
It's an important message as well, because think about this. A lot of people say that child abuse and that kind of thing is hereditary. Well, it's only hereditary if the next generation doesn't learn to take personal responsibility, stop blaming the world for what's happened to them, and just go, look, I'm going to make it different this time.
That's
I'm going
right.
to break the cycle.
Absolutely right. I had to just get over the fact. It's like, yeah, you did have parents that were narcissistic. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to let it eat up your life and keep you down and justify all the rotten things that you did to your own kids? Or are you going to do something to change it? You know, are you going to justify, you know, you not doing anything with your artwork and not using your talent, not helping anybody because they kept you down and told you you'd never amount to anything? Or are you going to say, you know what, I'm not buying into that? And change yourself, you know, change your image. And it takes a lot of diligence, persistence, and hard work. I'm not going to lie to anybody. You know, people that I help, I say, don't even think for a second that this is going to be easy, but I will be there to support you.
In fact, pray that it's hard.
Mother Hubbard, you know? Say again.
Pray that it's hard. That's what happens to me. When I've got things going really good, when I've got things going in swimmingly, perfectly, then I'm like, and it's been going on for a while, I start to lose my motivation. And I go to myself, you know what? God, please, please frack up my life. Send me some trauma. Give me some financial difficulty. I want to be the victim of some scumbaggery or something like that. Please frack up my life so that I can appreciate what I've got. And then...
You know what you can do instead of that, instead of doing that to yourself, is pay it forward and help somebody else that's in exactly the same boat you used to be in. And you're going to remember.
But that's what I do on a daily basis. That's what I do on a daily basis. That's why I need. In fact, that's the reason why everything's going so good and so easily, is because I'm helping so many people, which is why I need an extra spiritual entity to come and back up my life so I can appreciate it more.
Well, chaos sometimes is the vehicle for change. Actually,
that's exactly the point.
Chaos. You're right. You're absolutely right about that. I think it's part of the human condition sometimes.
Trauma is necessary.
I think it's finding a balance, not to have too much chaos where you can't be in a position to help anybody. You know what I mean? It's finding that, walking that fine line, and I think that's a lifelong process. At least it is for me.
Yeah, that's why I tell people that donate to me. Don't donate to me if you can't feed yourself or pay your rent or feed your family or something like that. Jeepers creepers, take care of yourself first, man.
Right.
Then
right.
Think about taking care of other people. Because if you can't take care of yourself, you can't help anybody else.
Right on. Right on. Truer words were never said. I had to learn that the hard way. I was always caretaking everybody else. And it's like, you know, if you don't learn self-love, you can't love anybody any more than you love yourself. You really can't. You know, that's what I think the bottom line is. And I try to teach people or show people how I made the journey from feeling like I was lower than whale doo-doo to feeling like a human being. You know, long journey, but it can be done. A lot of work. But in the end, it's worth it. You know, you can live life rather than just feel like you're a slave and exist, even though, you know, we are slaves, but you don't have to hate it. You can laugh at it instead.
Well, a friend of mine once told me, Vinny, it doesn't matter what we're doing, okay, we're still slaves. And I go, well, I'll tell you what, man, I may be a slave, but that's only my condition. It's right. Not my mentality.
Exactly.
Your mentality is that you're a slave. Exactly. And that means that you really are one.
You really are. Exactly. It's like if you notice, like, and laugh at it, it's like, well, then you're free. Really? Because nobody can put shackles on your mind but you. But the only person that can break free is you. That's where we all have a choice.
That's right. Cut through them psychological shackles, ladies and gentlemen. Stop holding yourself back. Take a risk, for frack's sake. I mean, stop worrying about stuff, man. After all, it's just the end of the world. And, and Julia, do you have a website that you can utter really quickly? We've got about 10 seconds.
VenetianCat.com. VenetianCat.com. My artwork.
VenetianCat.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Thank you, Vinnie.